The following podcast contains explicit language.
Previously on Empire on Blood.
We were under siege. We were going to lose the city of New York.
Case is on today for the court's ruling.
People say New York versus Calvin Tawari.
They did sloppy work and then they intentionally did wrong work.
They intentionally did wrong work in the Calvin case?
Yes, from what I can see so far.
You're not going to give up.
I can't.
This is what happened. You had a lot of killings in the summer of 1995, as I recall it was. And, oh no, hold it!
What?
Somebody's coming down the stairs, and he's not supposed to do that.
You mean from upstairs?
Yeah.
By himself?
He's 127 years old. He has the right to do that.
This is Alan Caron, a longtime prosecutor in the Bronx, and a rescuer of turtles.
Oh, my God. So do you keep them in a cage, or are they...
No. He's free to walk around. This is Andre the Giant. He's a giant for his species, and I got him from the Turtleback Zoo in 1989 when he was dying, and he's part of the permanent group.
Wow. How many do you have?
20.
Wow. And you take more, or...?
I'm trying not to. Look at this guy. See, he's a dog.
As a journalist, I've been threatened, arrested, even shot at once. But this is my first reptile encounter.
Oh, yeah, you rub him on the top of the neck. Okay. He loves that.
Okay.
Alan marches Andre up the stairs, but tortoises, they're relentless.
Hold on. Do not come down the stairs, hang in the ass.
Alan Caron and I are at his home in Westchester, his bachelor pad. Alan is short, wiry, fit, an outdoor tennis player all year round. His house is modest, compact living room, bachelor's kitchen, meaning cereal and soda cartons stacked against a counter. There's music memorabilia on the walls in the living room, one photo signed by Yoko and John. But most remarkable is that turtles and tortoises run free.
Turtle models, turtle candy dish.
Okay.
And so Alan Caron is known by colleagues and criminals alike as Turtle Man. I like that name. Sounds like a superhero. So that's what I'm going to call him, Turtle Man. For years, Turtle Man was perhaps the best prosecutor in the Bronx. Certainly one of the best, rarely lost. Oh, and he loved the job. He used to grab his briefcase as he walked out the door and sing song, "Off to Fight Crime." Had he ever considered being a private defense attorney, making real money?
A lot of the people you'd have to represent are real scum and are guilty.
Right.
So that is not for me.
Right. You walked into the prosecutor's office and thought, this is it. This is where I should be.
Yeah, pretty much. I like being a trial lawyer and I like investigating cases. And my approach is to put bad guys in jail. My approach was different than a lot of people in the office.
You were ballsier.
I would definitely say...
I would, too. I've interviewed a bunch of prosecutors over the years. Often they talk in attorney speak about not overreaching and being judicious with the power vested in them. Turtle Man, he strikes a different tone. We go out to a restaurant near Turtle Man's house to talk more. I like to talk to people in restaurants. It's friendlier, though noisier.
Lawyers are very superstitious. They don't like to make predictions on cases they have. And on many occasions, I have said, much to the chagrin of my bureau chief, I guarantee a conviction in this case.
Wow.
And when I've said that, I have always gotten a conviction.
Did you do that in the Bowery case?
That's, of course, the People versus Calvin Bowery. Cal was accused of a double homicide committed in 1992. Alan Caron was the prosecutor assigned to the case, which by the time he got involved was on life support. Years had gone by with no conviction. But Turtle Man, He's confident, even arrogant. He will get the job done, no matter what it takes. The Calvin Buari case is no exception.
Absolutely. I told that to my office, and I told that to the judge, and I told that to...
Check if you change your mind on the surgery, let me know, okay?
Let me have a chamomile tea.
Okay? Chamomile tea?
Lemon and honey, yeah.
I told that to the defense attorney. Your guy is dead. In Buari, there was no doubt in my mind he was going down.
And so a ballsy prosecutor stalks a drug kingpin through the streets of the Bronx. This is Empire on Blood, a story of murder, betrayal, and a man who fought the law for two decades, and of the prosecutor who fought back. I'm Steve Fishman. So Alan Caron, he's the picture of the badass lawman, even as he stands in the middle of his living room, affectionately stroking the neck of a 127-year-old tortoise. There's no doubt in my mind that society needs people like him, fearless nemesis of bad guys. Turtle Man is in the Rudy Giuliani mold. He will get the job done, take control of the bad guys. Once Turtle Man makes up his mind you're on the wrong side of the law, he locks and loads. Oh, he enjoys the fight. Just ask the people who fought beside him.
I remember one time, it was years back, it was during the trial.
This is Frank Vigiano, a New York City police detective who worked with Turtle Man.
I found the witness that we couldn't find. At the last minute, you know, somebody we see on TV, like, we got the witness on the stand, you know, and he testified, and he was damaging big time. So after the testimony, Alan's standing next to the defense attorney with the bad guy sitting there, and he says, how's your client feel now, you know? Those kind of things, like, and the kid got up, was going to kill him, like, the court officers had to grab him, you know? But that's Alan, you know, he just...
Yeah,
that's his way, you know. You know, I mean, it, you know, he wanted to put a bad guy away. He'd go to whatever he had to do it, you know.
Whatever he had to do it.
I have my own style, which probably is different than many people. And essentially, I did whatever I wanted. And I never got reversed for anything. I did that.
Here we go. There we go.
What kind of tortoise is that again?
He's a leopard tortoise. North Africa.
So Turtle Man marches Andre the Giant, the dog-sized tortoise, up the stairs again. But back to fighting crime. Let's look at what Turtle Man had to work with in The People versus Buari. Other assistant district attorneys had taken a swing at the case, but they had just one witness identifying Calvin as the murderer. And that guy, a crack dealer like Calvin, died in Jamaica before he could testify. So the case had stalled. Still, a double murder? There's pressure to clear those. And Turtle Man had an obvious suspect.
He was the head of the organization. He was the leader. There's no doubt about that. And we knew that when I first got the case. We knew this is the guy responsible for all the killings.
Calvin had just turned 22 when he was arrested for the murder of the Harris brothers. Soon he'd be charged with a third murder. By the time Turtle Man got Calvin's case, none of the charges had led to a conviction or even a trial. The third murder rap was eventually dropped. Through it all, Calvin remained on the streets of the North Bronx, distributing crack and living the life. Calvin Buari strutted around his neighborhood in mink coats. He had two. And he drove a $40,000 BMW. He had two. At that time, a cop with 5 years' experience earned just a little over $40,000 a year. Calvin Buari rubbed their noses in his success.
Mayor Giuliani took crime personally. It made him angry. Turtle Man is the same. He has no patience for bad guys. But until Turtle Man takes on the Harris Brothers case, it looks like Cal is going to wriggle free. Cal says that Turtle Man's predecessors offered him a deal. Plead guilty to the double homicide and take a 3-year sentence. Now that's a crazy offer. 3 years for 2 murders? Dealers get more than that for carrying a few vials of crack in their pockets. But Cal? He rejects the DA's offer. If they're putting that on the table, they obviously have no case. And also, don't forget, Cal says he's innocent. At this point, it's worth noting, Cal believes in the criminal justice system. Believes that if he's innocent, then the system will affirm that.
You had detectives, you had DAs trying to make a case. So they asked me, they said, it's an old case. We don't think there's a witness. Do what you can. Keep it alive.
The DA hopes to keep it alive long enough to catch a break. Turtle Man keeps the charge on the docket, shows up at court, requests adjournments.
At that point, his lawyer should have moved to dismiss, no?
We answered ready.
In other words, Turtle Man stood up in court and said, there is no reason to dismiss this case, Your Honor. We are ready to go to trial.
We answered ready. We were... I would have gone as far as I could and then ended up dismissing it. We answered ready on the case.
Oh, it was a total bluff.
It was a total bluff. Because it's either going to be dismissed or you answer ready.
A total bluff. But luck favors the prepared mind, and Turtle Man is nothing if not prepared. Here comes the luck. 3 years after the Harris brothers' murder, a turf war breaks out for control of the crack trade. Bodies are falling in and around the corner on Blood, Cal's corner. One of the dead is the older brother of a guy named Dwight Robinson. Dwight's a young dealer who sells crack for Cal. For a long time, Dwight felt close to Cal. In fact, he idolized Cal, emulated him, and believed he understood him.
And that's the type of mentality we have, to rise above. If you gotta kill a few people to get what you want in life, so be it. If that's part of accomplishing your goal, so be it. As long as your goal is accomplished.
So in 1995 in the North Bronx, goals are getting accomplished. The death toll is mounting. 6, 7, 8 shootings in the period of a month or so. It's dangerous out there if you're trying to earn a living selling crack. But if you're Turtle Man, it's an opportunity. Turtle Man is working with detectives at the 47th Precinct. The cops are talking to everyone connected to the turf war. They summon Dwight Robinson to the station. Dwight is in the middle of it. He's scared. His brother has been murdered. Dwight could be next. He's already facing drug charges. There might be an attempted murder to pin on him too. But Turtle Man and the cops make something clear to Dwight. They don't want him. The bigger picture to them is Cal.
Second time we had him in, we got him talking about his brother. I said, well, can you help us at all? Can you, you weren't the witness to your brother, you're not a witness to that.
But maybe he saw something.
He said, I did see him do one other one, though. An old case.
Dwight told Turtle Man he saw Cal kill the Harris brothers 3 years earlier. The case that Turtle Man has been desperately trying to keep alive. A stroke of luck.
And Dwight said, yeah, I was there.
Turtle Man claps as he recalls that moment. A new witness. Turtle Man jumps on it. He may not fully understand Dwight's motivation. Dwight may not fully understand his own motivation. But, well, this is a moment to transact business, not psychologize. With Dwight on his side, Turtle Man has a shot at finally getting his man, and he's ready to deal with a lot to offer. Turtle Man can make Dwight's drug charges disappear, and an attempted murder? Don't worry about that. That's the message Dwight takes away.
At this point, I says to myself, I could give him up.
So Dwight signs on the dotted line, and Turtle Man gets even more than he bargained for. Dwight isn't just another cooperator. He becomes a super cooperator. He's like Turtle Man's deputy. He recruits witnesses, his drug associates, people that Cal supplied with crack. He even accompanies one of them to the precinct in the back of a police cruiser. And he encourages others to testify against Cal.
Was it hard to get those guys to come in or not, those other witnesses?
Nah, because at that point, he had wronged so many people that a lot of people wanted him gone. So he became like a bully to everybody else, where dudes felt like there was dudes that was literally terrified of this man.
Dwight does his best to turn witnesses. This is J-Mo, the ex-con and street novelist who ran with Dwight and Cal.
Did they try to get you to testify?
Three times, yes. Dwight tried three times.
To get you to testify against Cal?
Mm-hmm. Huh. Recruit me.
What Dwight
asked to take me to Rochester and make me rich again.
Oh.
Go fuck yourself. Motherfucker, I was never rich. And I'm not going nowhere with you. Let me forget that shit. Yeah, I almost said too much. All right, man.
J-Mo, by the way, doesn't agree to testify against Cal. Doesn't matter. Three dealers, including Dwight, do testify, as well as others around the drug scene. Turtle Man waves his magic wand, and drug, weapons, robbery charges, poof, no one will do time.
So you don't make this case without Dwight, obviously.
Could we have made it without him? Without Dwight, we wouldn't have had anybody. Could we have tried the case without him and with the other witnesses? Sure, but that makes no sense. I mean, Dwight was a gift.
But how to keep that gift secret from Cal's defense? That's after the break. We're back with Empire on Blood. I remember the first time I went to Turtle Man's house. He was standing in the driveway, cradling one of his prized possessions, a turtle. He was smiling. It was a big, beaming smile. They make great pets, he tells me. So cuddly. No kidding, he really says this. Turtle Man devoted his entire career to the DA's office, 40 plus years. He sacrificed any semblance of a social life. Turtle Man retired a couple years back. He ended up with a good pension, a small plaque, a souvenir badge, a bunch of reptiles. He's been trying to make up for lost time.
How's the Match.com life going?
Oh, it sucks. It sucks. Not what I enjoy doing, but you do the best you can.
And so Turtle Man is happy to return with me to more heroic times. Dwight flips in August 1995. Calvin's trial starts 3 months later. One problem for Turtle Man, Calvin has no apparent motive to kill the Harris brothers. Exactly, says Turtle Man. That's what makes Calvin so dangerous. He's deep down ruthless and petty and thin-skinned. He's not like you or me, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. He kills for cause and for no cause.
It sends a message in the street. Mm-hmm. Everybody was scared of Calvin. Mm-hmm. See, the Harris brothers had nothing to do with drugs. They had to do with cars. But they knew him from the area.
Huh.
Their sin was insulting him in front of people.
Uh-huh.
Insulting Calvin in front of people? According to Turtle Man, that happened 3 years earlier. On the night of September 10th, 1992, that evening the Harris brothers stopped on East 213th Street, just off Bronxwood. They ordered some food to go from the Jamaican restaurant on the corner. As they walked out, they passed a group of Cal's drug dealers. One brother is heard saying, "Get that money, kid. I hear you got a street sweeper." A street sweeper is a powerful rifle. So the brothers are poking their noses into other people's business.
And Calvin took offense at that. So he got the gun from the garbage can, and he just they went into the restaurant, came back with their food, got into the BMW, and he just opened fire, and he just killed those motherfuckers.
I wonder about Turtle Man's version of Calvin. Turtle Man never actually spoke with Cal. Would the Cal I've been speaking to these past 7 years risk his profitable enterprise over a stray remark or two? The Cal I know is all about the money. If it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. That's what he likes to say. So to me, undisciplined lashing out, it doesn't seem like Cal. But admittedly, I've only known Cal as a mature person, middle-aged, and I've never known him on the streets. In any case, Turtle Man doesn't need to prove to a jury that Cal's impulsive or cruel. Just floating the idea can be effective.
A trial is like going to war.
Right.
And the goal is obviously to prove the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, but it's also important to make the jury dislike the defendant, if you can. Dislike things about him. If you can make the jury see who the defendant really was and dislike him, you're ahead of the game.
I had to ask.
In your mind, there's no chance he's innocent.
No chance.
So game on. Cal hires a defense attorney named Ken Schreiber. Ken spent a couple of years working for Legal Aid, but soon went out on his own, a solo practitioner with an office in Queens. Ken's white-haired with a paunch these days and recently retired. My producer and I meet him at a diner on Long Island, a Greek diner. Naturally, I order Jewish food for everyone.
It's not even Purim, and we get our humantash in here.
See, I'm surprised you know what Purim is.
This is my
thank you, that's very guy. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, it's not helping my diet. You know, since I retired, I put on about 20 pounds.
Oof, the retirement 20.
That was a bad back, I think, that helped, too.
Ken is not a crusader in a holy war, unlike Turtle Man. He's good at his job. He's lost his share of trials. Defense attorneys often lose. But he's won several acquittals, too.
You believed Cal was innocent?
I don't know. To be candid, I don't know. And, you know, that never was part of the equation with me.
To Ken, innocence, guilt, not essential to his job. In fact, for Ken, having a guilty client is easier. You don't feel bad losing. Either way, Ken gets paid to provide a vigorous defense. There's no bonus for winning. His job is to introduce doubt. If a jury has reasonable doubt about Cal's guilt, then he walks. What's reasonable doubt? Simple. A doubt that you can give a reason to. In Cal's case, that's not going to be simple. Not with all the witnesses against him. And these aren't Cal's rivals. At least three of the cooperating witnesses worked with Cal. And more witnesses keep popping up. Witnesses whose names Turtle Man hasn't heard before. One phones the district attorney's office the day the trial starts. He wants to testify. Turtle Man welcomes the volunteers in the usual way. If they face charges, he offers them a deal. One witness is already in prison. In that case, Turtle Man can put in a word and help with parole. That kind of power, it's hard for a defense attorney to compete with it.
You talk about an unfair playing ground. If a defense lawyer were to give a fact witness $50 to encourage him to testify on his client's behalf, that would be called bribery. If a district attorney offers a man facing 25 years for a murder a walk in exchange for his testimony, that's called justice. So there's that problem that's inherent in any case when you're dealing with cooperators. This case dealt with nothing but cooperators.
Ken's memory is a little faulty. There were a couple of witnesses who didn't need deals. But even the judge seemed exasperated. At one point he said, I'm reading from the transcript, quote, maybe there's a call out in the Northeast area. Anybody having narcotics cases pending against him? By going to the district attorney's office, you'll get probation. I don't know. End quote. The trial begins on October 11, 1995. Turtle Man's witnesses all tell similar stories, the crux of which is, I saw Calvin Buari gun down the Harris brothers. Witnesses say they decided to come forward after a brief phone call from Dwight, like a 30-second call. Why? Because I want to do the right thing.
There was nothing that can be done about it except to attempt to show as best you can to the fact finders that this is taking place. For me to stand up and scream, that's not fair. You're using people that are going to lie to say and do anything is not going to accomplish anything.
Ken tries to introduce doubt in the minds of the fact finders. That's the jury. He cross-examines the cooperators.
This was several years ago. Did you tell your mother about it? Did you tell a police officer about it? Did you tell anybody about it before Alan Karen offered you a get-out-of-jail card? And they said no, they didn't.
Fighting cooperators, that's tough for a defense attorney, especially in the Calvin Buari case. Because as a prosecutor in New York State, Turtle Man has another weapon, like a nuclear weapon. Ordinarily, the prosecution provides a list of its witnesses to defense lawyers before the trial starts, accompanied with background information on them, notes of interviews with witnesses, police reports, that kind of thing. But there are exceptions. In this case, Turtle Man doesn't want to give the defense even the names of his witnesses, until, that is, they are on the stand. He tells the judge that Cal is so dangerous that witnesses are afraid for their lives. He asks the judge for a protection order. And the judge? Later, he says he feels duped. He says he'll never do this again. But when Turtle Man asks, the judge says, okay. He lets Turtle Man keep the names of his witnesses a secret. So Cal's attorney, Ken Schreiber, he can't even be sure who exactly will testify against his client.
And it was torture to go dealing with individuals who you didn't know, who you really didn't know anything about their background, who you didn't have an opportunity for an investigator to investigate. You really didn't even have an opportunity to evaluate the court files, which were in that same building for the most part that you were on trial. So it was difficult.
Ken didn't know the name of one mystery witness, as he called him, like it was a game show. That mystery witness was 13 when he says he saw the shooting. He testifies when he's 16. He's been busy in the interim, accumulated an armed robbery, a weapons charge, a drug charge. Turtle Man waves his wand. No jail time for the teenager. So he's happy to testify. He says he was either a block or a block and a half away. He can't keep his story straight. Either way, he testifies that he not only saw Cal do the killing, but was able to see through the car windows, past the driver, and into the passenger seat. Oh, and he testified that he recognized that the brothers were murdered in a late model Beamer, and that Cal was carrying a hat, a Kangol hat, in his hand. A hat and a gun, apparently. And that, from 250 feet away, across a busy street with parking on both sides. Ken didn't have time to investigate that story. He couldn't even be certain that Dwight Robinson would testify.
No, I just learned his name either that morning or the day before. And I was given the background information probably 20 minutes before I started my cross-examination.
On the stand, Dwight is brilliant. He speaks softly, calmly. He calls Ken Schreiber, sir, repeatedly. It gets under Ken's skin, as if Dwight is making fun of him. And then Dwight calmly tells the jury the account all the others have told. He saw Cal shoot the Harris brothers. But for me, the climactic moment of the trial is somewhere else. There'd been a series of chaotic events just weeks before the trial started, including shootouts and murders. Cal survived an assassination attempt. I'm reading from the transcript now. Defense. That's Ken Schreiber. Did you have anything to do with the shooting of Calvin Buari? Dwight's response. No, I didn't, sir. We'll return to Dwight and to this moment in the next episode. For now, let's stay with Cal. In Ken Schreiber's memory, Cal just stared at Dwight from the defense table. Cal was quiet, composed. He's Cal. in full control of his conscious behavior, at least. But then there's his subconscious. Cal has a nightmare about Dwight's testimony.
He's looking at me and laughing at me at the stand because he's utilizing the system now. He utilized the system to take my life. So it's like, indirectly, he's telling me, I didn't get you, but I got you.
That's How does the nightmare end?
The nightmare ends with me waking up and I'm sitting in a cell, Steve. You know, I'm in a cage.
When we return, in dreams begin reality. It's Dwight versus Cal, with consequences for both. We're back with Empire on Blood. I'm sitting in the Greek diner with Ken Schreiber, Cal's defense attorney. I want to understand what a lawyer does when he believes that a witness just flat out lies.
You don't necessarily say, aren't you lying? Because this is not Perry Mason where they're going to, you know, snap up and say, you got me, counsel. You have to try to impeach his credibility in a variety of directions. And that's why time and effort of an investigator and background information was invaluable, which I didn't have.
A trial is a contest of unequal forces. It's designed that way. And Ken Schreiber, he's not particularly well armed. The best he can do is try to wear down the other side, make a point here, a point there. Hopefully, they add up. In every trial, there are competing truths. But let's face it, Turtleman's truth is well supported. 6 witnesses say they saw the crime. Did they lie? Did they weigh the benefits and make, let's call it a business decision, spend years in prison or cooperate, tell the story the DA wants to hear? That's for the jury to decide. The jury deliberates for a mere 2 hours. The verdict, guilty as charged. Cal is sentenced to 50 years to life. He is off the streets. And that means there's a job opening in the crack trade. Guess who fills it? The Corner on Blood promotes from within.
Dwight was articulate. These guys are not what you would think of as sort of ghetto drug dealers. Mm-hmm. And Dwight was likable. And we were talking to him, and I said, listen, Dwight, I'm not going to ask you to not commit crimes or go straight or this and that, because I could say whatever I want, and you can say, like, fuck you. But just as a practical matter, man, your brother's dead. Your friends are dead. These people are going to jail. Nobody's fucking winning here. So you know what? Doesn't make sense. So he said, yo, Mr. Karen, I'm done with this, man. You know, I see what's happening to the community. And that. But in talking to him, I mean, he seemed to be intelligent. And he was saying, man, I'm getting out of this, man, because I know so many people who are dead. There's no reason. You know, I'm done with this. Then he goes right back.
Turtleman thought he understood Dwight. Dwight had upheld his end of the bargain and was rewarded. Drug charges go away and there's an attempted murder that Dwight seems to be involved in. That investigation goes away too. Exceptional clearance is the reason given. That's a rarely used designation, but then Dwight has earned it. Turtleman cares about Dwight. Dwight was his protege, but Dwight, he wasn't necessarily what he seemed. Dwight returns to East 213th in Bronxwood. He's now the boss, emperor of the Empire on Blood. He runs his own crew, dresses like Cal, sometimes is mistaken for him. 2 years later, Dwight is arrested for murdering a rival drug dealer. The details of that crime resemble the murder of the Harris brothers. A lone gunman, same type of weapon, and same spot. The Corner on Blood. The assistant DA assigned to prosecute Dwight comes to Turtleman. He knows that Dwight has been a super cooperator. Should they give him a break? Back in the restaurant in Westchester, I asked Turtleman about that.
I said, basically, fuck him. He did this.
he goes down for it. You know, if he had been arrested for, let's say, selling marijuana, I certainly would have, you know, said, well, let's help this guy, help us. But for killing somebody, you get nothing.
And so Dwight finds he does not possess a get-out-of-jail-free card. He's sentenced to 25 years to life. And Alan Karen, Turtle Man, well, his record speaks for itself. At his house, I ask him directly.
But so never got reversed for anything?
Nope.
And then I catch a glimpse of Andre the Giant again. Turtle Man's cuddly, ancient tortoise, his boon companion. I have a feeling Andre will be around long after the rest of us have gone. Next time on Empire on Blood, my new friend, Dwight Robinson.
The statute of limitation is
seven.
Five, I think, on attempt murder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but anyway, I don't know if he sensed something. He turns the car on and get back out. Stands and look around. And he gets back in. Next you know, it's just raining shots.
Empire on Blood is produced by Emil Klein and Mia Lobel with Joelle Doucette. Our editor is Julia Barton. Original scoring by Joel St. Julian. Theme song by Mr. Len. Fact-checking by Stephanie Daniel. Special thanks to Jason Gambrell, Evan Viola, Christopher Landry, Rachel Strom, Nicole Buntis, Christy Mirabal, Kate Miskal, Lisa Firestein, Jacob Smith, Carly Migliori, and Andy Bowers at Panoply. I'm Steve Fishman. A kingdom built on blood leaves the king lonely. Bear the burden for your sins and then only. Beware the blurred line between friend and foe. The last words you hear.
It's time to go. It's time to go.